This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 31st of August, 2012. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 31st of August 2012. And this week they've been edited by Bill Argles, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Ellen Gray.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. And now let's see what's on. Well, we've got Marty Pellow in Blood Brothers at the Mayflower, Southampton. And that's on Tuesday the 11th till Saturday the 22nd of September. If you want tickets for this Willie Russell's very famous show, you go to the box office 02380 711 811. Or you can go online to mayflower.org.uk. And the Plaza Theatre in Romsey, Rayods, is presenting John Buchan and Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps, adapted by Patrick Barlow. And this is the 13th to the 15th of September 2012. If you want tickets, go to the box office 01794 512 987, or you can go online to www.plazatheatre.com. There's also Deborah McAndrew's adaptation of A Government Inspector. Adaptation of A Government Inspector. This will be at the Theatre Royal Winchester, 25th to the 29th of September. The story revolves around a flashy stranger's arrival in a small Pennine town and the residents' belief that he is a government inspector. Hilarity and chaos follow as the townspeople attempt to bribe and blackmail a man who is no more than a passing chancer down on his luck. For tickets, please call the box office 01962 840 440 or visit theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. And also at the for the Hyde 900 Michaelmas concert season at St Bartholomew's Church, we've got a variety of things there. On Saturday, September the 8th, Index Cantorum performs the Queen's music, featuring work from Tallis, Parson, Bird and Purcell. 1 week later, on Saturday, September the 15th, A Walk Through the Ages of English Song is performed by soprano Sarah Viersen-Corsa. And then on October the 13th, we've got a broad range of classical, contemporary and jazz music by the clarinet quartet of Robert Blanken, Emma Alexandra, Sally Cartwright and Spence Bundy. For all of these, if you go to hyde900.org.uk, all tickets can be available from 7pm on the night and they're £7 each. I've got a thing about a raffle here to support a charity, and the charity is for two young men, two brothers, Adam Knott and David Knott, who suffer from ocular albinism, and they've both been selected for the Paralympic goalball team. You may have heard of them on the radio, the local radio. The tickets are £1 each to support them for their training, accommodation, equipment and travel, as they represent their country in tournaments across Europe. If you would like any of these raffle tickets, please contact David Farthing on 01962 856 038. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 31st of August at 6:18 a.m. and begins at 7:53 p.m. And on Wednesday the 5th of September, it ends at 6:26 a.m. and begins at 7:42 p.m. If you have any problems with your memory stick, there is a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826, and she will then send you a replacement. please replace the card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged, as several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. The front page headlines this week are Suburbs to Trial 20-mile-an-hour Zones, Schools to Appeal Over GCSE Grades, and Olympic Legacy for Torchbearers. May we have the story behind the first headline, please? Deborah.
Suburbs to Trial 20-mile-an-hour Zones. Stanmore, Highcliffe and Winnall could be the testing grounds for radical changes to city speed limits in Winchester. Hampshire County Council has earmarked £200,000 to trial 20 miles an hour limits in residential areas across the county. A further £150,000, specifically for Winchester, has been secured from the local Sustainable Transport Fund and will be available from April next year. The Residential 20 programme is expected to receive approval from Executive Member for Environment and Transport, Mel Kendall, on September the 11th, when the chosen neighbourhoods will be announced. In an April report, council chiefs recommended that five residential areas should be selected from across the county. Councillor Brian Collin, who has been a vocal supporter of the proposals, pushed for Winchester Town Forum funds for trials in more neighbourhoods. He said, "It's not only for safety that we want this. It will feel safer and it will be a more pleasant environment to be in too." City Council portfolio holder for transport Victoria Weston has welcomed the plans. She said, "People want to see lower speed limits and they want to see more spaces in the city where they can move around safely. Speeding is always a top priority when speaking to residents." Councillor Wilson noted that support from the communities themselves was vital to the project, a sentiment echoed by Councillor Kendall. He said, "Given that speed enforcement of 20 miles an hour limits is likely to be a low priority for the police, its success will depend on local residents. A 20 miles an hour limit has long been favoured by council bosses, but recent changes by the Department for Transport mean that schemes can now be implemented with less red tape." David Chafe, Secretary of the North Stanmore Residents Association, said, "It's definitely a good idea because I live in the valley in Stanmore and we have excessive speeds from 4x4s and motorbikes. I do think it needs to be enforceable, but if it goes down to 20 miles an hour and one or two cases are proven against people breaking that, it would make people think twice." Some organisations question the effectiveness of 20 miles an hour limits, though. Eric Bridgestock of Independent Road Safety Research said, "Virtually all accidents, not just road accidents, result from a combination of a hazardous condition, for example fog, a tired or a drunk driver, and a triggering event, such as a misjudgment or a failure to look. A vehicle exceeding 20 miles an hour is not a hazard, nor is it a triggering event. A moving vehicle is a hazard, but a 20 miles an hour limit doesn't remove that hazard. And since typical average reductions in 20 miles an hour areas are about 1 mile an hour, a 20 miles an hour limit does little to mitigate it." But the Reverend Mike Gardner of St Luke's Church in Stanmore is in favour of the move. He said, "I think lowering speed limits would be an excellent idea. It's been a long time coming, and I think a lot of people in Stanmore feel that way. And if it would mean the removal of the sleeping policeman in Stanmore Lane, then even better."
And the second story, please, Noel.
Yes, Schools to Appeal Over GCSE Grades. Hampshire schools are among those across the country who have complained that students who sat GCSE English have been harshly marked down. Head teachers have reported their concerns over the issue of downgrading of this year's GCSEs to the County Council. Anger has risen as some pupils predicted a grade C in English achieved a D, meaning they could struggle to get on college courses or apprenticeships next month. Others who were expected to get an A or A star missed out on the top grades. Councillor Roy Perry, who's in charge of the county-run schools, said 60% of Hampshire pupils achieved five or more GCSE grades, A star to C, including English and maths, but some schools had seen an unexpected decline in their English results. The Tory council chief said, overall, it is only just over a 1% reduction, but it can be more significant in some schools.
And the third story, please, Ellen.
Olympic legacy for torchbearers. Hampshire Olympic torchbearers Anton James and Rob Whittington, with Winchester tattoo artist Rob Barfoot. Two Hampshire Olympic torchbearers will have a lasting memory of their big day earlier this summer. Rob Whittington of Stockbridge Road, Winchester, and Anton James of Fareham ran with the torch in Swanage on July the 13th. But shortly before their relay, they designed a commemorative tattoo with Winchester artist Rob Barfoot of Destiny Tattoo in Stockbridge Road. And the picture shows the two men and the tattoo artists. And the tattoo is a picture of the torch, and there's a stylized runner underneath made out of the numbers 2012. So it looks like a cartoon of a runner, but it also spells out the year. Mr. James, aged 44, said, "I said we should try and mark the occasion, and Rob and I put our heads together and thought the tattoo would be a good idea." And Mr. Whittington added, "I've been tattooed by Rob before, so I said we should go to him. And it worked out great. We were very happy with the design." Mr. Barfoot, who's worked in Winchester for 11 years, said, "I was chuffed with the design and I was really happy to do it. It's great because it's a runner, but it also spells out 2012. The torchbearers both work for Batley's Cash and Carry and were nominated to carry it by a colleague for raising money for breast cancer and multiple sclerosis charities over the past 10 years.
And that concludes the front page headline stories. We're now going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, people in pictures, historical items, chronicle comment, and finish with first person. I'll start with the death notices. Benham, Jane Edith Benham, aged 90. Broadbridge, Betty Broadbridge, peacefully at Bulmer House, Petersfield. Daly, Emma Daly, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 45. Dewey, Terry Dewey, suddenly in hospital after a short illness. Fabian, Olive nay Moga Fabian, peacefully aged 96. Goodchild, Elizabeth Marjorie Goodchild, peacefully at home, aged 67. Harvey, Keith Adrian Harvey, peacefully at home, aged 80. Harwood, Arthur Harwood, in Winchester. Newman, Richard Dick Newman, aged 75, in hospital. Thomas, Debbie Thomas, peacefully at home. Thomas, Deborah nay Willis-Croft Thomas, at home. And that ends the death notices. And now we have a Christian comment read by Deborah.
And this week it's written by Terry E. Hemmings. And he entitles it, "The Shared Humanity of All." We British surprised ourselves at the Olympics. Did we really win all those medals? Did we really get everything ready on time, manage to get the transport sorted, and manage to avoid any security disasters? The answer to all those questions is yes. And the services of the volunteers meant that for most people there was a real sense of help and care. Now we're starting again with the Paralympics, which we hope will provide an equally positive experience. These games will teach us politically correct language. I know many people deride the idea, but the acknowledgement that these Olympians are to be admired and not pitied is important. If we look back, and not too far, many of the insults hurled at people were linked with what were considered physical or mental handicaps. We recognise now the shared humanity of all and celebrate the fact that circuses no longer have freak shows and polite society no longer goes to gawp at those in bedlam. We celebrate that it is no longer regarded normal to hide in institutions people whom we consider as different. It was all part of the human tendency to judge others in order to feel superior, the "I thank God I'm not like that other person" mentality. Jesus warned of the perils of judging and how it was a sign of spiritual weakness and not strength. He warned us not to judge in case we are judged ourselves, and his follower Paul taught similarly. So the politically correct phrase "differently enabled" has much to commend it. I worked with a team leader in Africa who needed crutches because of childhood polio, and I was in awe of the strength of his arm muscles and his great skill as a mechanic. My ability was merely to carry his toolbox. In Hampshire, we're amazed by the actors in the Blue Apple Theatre Company and what they bring to us. It's clearly a case of differently enabled. There are so many opportunities in which we as humans with different abilities and problems can share our common humanity. The Olympic Games were founded to unite the nations of the world, and the Paralympics are to unite us. As in so many abilities, we are on a spectrum which helps us to recognise our own areas of being disabled and to show that our judgments, made to make us feel superior, are woefully wrong. An early monk asked another how to be a good Christian and received this reply: "If you want to find rest in this life and the next, say at every moment, 'Who am I?' and judge no one."
We have 8 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
"Yes, a parapet stone back in all its glory," says Chris Pyle. "Sir, I'm a friend of the Hockley Viaduct, and at a meeting with Winchester City Council discussing the retrieval of parapet stones from the field beneath the viaduct, I mentioned that there was a stone nearby that could be an old boundary stone. The location, beside 5 Bridges Road, is marked on Ordnance Survey maps, but the stone could not be confirmed as it was face down in the ditch. I asked if it could be raised and reinstated if it proved to be a boundary stone. Soon after the work started on the viaduct, I was walking along 5 Bridges Road and was delighted to see the stone, dated 1932, reinstalled as it was 80 years ago. I'm grateful to Andy Hickman of Winchester City Council and others involved in resurrecting this piece of Winchester's history. The stone, which bears the Winchester City crest, is one of 10 such stones now still visible around the city. The others are in Sarum Road near Killam Lane, Romsey Road, Pitt Roundabout, Oliver's Battery Road South, Stockbridge Road at the Hetstock Corner, Dean Lane near Lanham Lane, badly damaged, Morstead Road near Deacon Hill Corner, Alsford Road adjacent to Hospital Field by the bus stop, Andover Road at the footpath by Henry Beaufort School, Worthy Road at Abbots Barton. There should be stones in at least 2 other locations, but I have not found these in the places marked on the Ordnance Survey map. These are Chilcombe Lane on the Chilcombe side of the motorway and St Catherine's Way, and Eastern Lane in the dip between the motorway junction and the shoulder of Mutton Farm. If anyone knows of these, or other 1932 stones, I would be interested to hear of them. Chris Pyle, Green Hill Road, Winchester.
And now, welcome aboard for the true cost of commuting by train. Two correspondents take issue with a letter in last week's Hampshire Chronicle. And the headline is Commuter Misery. Last week's correspondent, Mr. Grewcock, is wide of the mark on daily travel costs. First of all, Jackie Byford. Sir, your correspondent, Mr. Grewcock, Chronicle Letters, August the 23rd, commented on the value of a season ticket to London. The comment was a little disingenuous in mentioning a cost per journey of just £10, given that that is the cost of travelling one way, and most commuters do like to come home after a long day's work. The same calculation fails to include the cost of travelling to and from the station. Relatively few of us live close enough for it to be man-powered, so we have the 55 pence a mile cost ourselves to consider. The cost of parking at the station, a further £4 a day, and the cost of underground or bus travel in London. For this princely sum, many of the Winchester-based passengers have to stand on the train in peak hours. I would respectfully suggest that Mr. Grewcock would find it more difficult to enjoy the Chronicle and a cuppa, a mere £1.40 with a bite card, if he had worked out the full cost of the journey. And as for 75 minutes of peace, have you heard how many announcements are made on trains today? Jackie Byford, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy. And then Louise Hedges. Sir, Mr. Grewcock is incorrect in his quick calculation. A standard class annual rail ticket from Winchester to Waterloo is £4,372, which even if I only have 2 weeks annual leave a year, works out at £17.48 a day, no cuppa included. On top of this, I also need to pay £8 a day to park at the station. No buses run from my village early enough for me to get to work on time. And the last bus would mean leaving work at 4:30 in the afternoon. So, £25.48 a day. Now, I rarely treat myself to a cuppa on top of that, which last time I purchased one was £1.85. And by the way, this does not in any way guarantee an actual seat. I wonder if Mr. Grewcock works for South West Trains' public relations company, as I know no one queuing up for the 7:05 in the morning who believes that this is a very good deal. Louise Hedges, Main Road, Hursley.
Happy memories at Cornerways, and it says name and address supplied. Sir, I read with great sadness the proposed closure of Cornerways Care Home in Kingsworthy. I started working there when it first opened, working at night. I loved it. Once we had it full, myself and other staff used to entertain the residents at parties. Once, six of us did the can-can. Of course, a drop of drink was taken to give us courage. We had a bar with a licence and did many parties. We also used to take them on coach trips. I have great memories of my years at Cornerways and made lots of friends, both staff and residents. It should not be closed.
Bin collection worst in 40 years. Sir, our dustbin should be collected each Friday. 2 weeks ago, our refuse bin was not collected till the following Tuesday, and only then after four telephone calls to Winchester City Council by my wife and me. No apology or explanation for this oversight was ever given. It is now 3 p.m. on Friday and our refuse bin has still not been collected. Our call to the council has met with the usual response that the matter is being looked into. My wife and I have lived in Swarriton for over 40 years, and the council's bin collection service was always admirable until Biffer recently took over. Excuse me. Today is the fourth time, at least, that Biffer has failed to collect on time. I believe that many other complaints have been made about the present level of service, I consequently think that the council should urgently consider firing Biffer and perhaps restoring collection by the council's own people. Robert Larrard, East Lodge, Swarriton, near Alsford.
And Cynthia Berry writes, infill is spoiling Winchester. Sir, how many more green spaces in Winchester are we to lose? How can Winchester City Council think of overloading Abbots Barton Estate with 60 more dwellings? The two adjoining fields have already started building approximately 90 homes and will have access through the estate. We have to suffer commuters parking all day, leaving residents nowhere to park, and restricting road access through the estate for buses and large vehicles. The City Council is thinking of taking away our garages to build flats. So where are we to park, put our cars? Am I mad in thinking that with this amount of building, it's possible to generate a minimum of 150 extra cars through the estate? Is there any thought for the many children who live here who have to cross Chaundler Road to get to the play area? Abbots Barton is a large estate and has taken many years to mature and is now a settled community. Our green areas have a huge amount of wildlife, not to mention the beautiful mature trees, including Sweet Chestnut, in Dyson Drive, where one proposed building area is. Winchester City Council wants to overload the estate and change its lovely feel. Does the council think of the elderly residents? Simmons Court is right beside one area for proposed building in Hillier Way, and Abbots Barton Nursing Home is next to the development that is happening now. Where is the infrastructure for all these new residents? It is at least 1 mile to the nearest shop, so that causes more car runs. Local schools cannot take any more children, so there will be more car runs to schools further away. When is infill of houses ever going to end? So many lovely areas in Winchester have been ruined, but still it goes on. Surely the heritage of our beautiful city of Winchester should take priority. Cynthia Berry, Coney Green, Abbots Barton.
Beware of these scrap metal dealers. Sir, as an OAP, I've always been very careful not to be taken for a ride by tradespersons. However, recently I collected a load of good quality scrap metal, hoping for a return, as I had some large house expenses and thought a few pounds back into the bank would help. I had a card from a scrap dealer with only a telephone number and details, i.e. scrap metal recycling, best prices paid, cash on collection. The driver seemed pleased with the haul, but was told the truck would be weighed and he would return with the docket and cash the next day, and a time was fixed when I'd be at home. No one came. I rang and eventually spoke, I think, to the owner, who seemed very surprised to think I expected any cash, as it was removed as a favour to me. I phoned several more times, but I fear my number was recognised and the line went dead. I had been conned, and was furious, even more so as on the side of the truck was a Checker Trade sign. I thought we could trust those carrying this emblem, and am in the process of checking reliability. I hope this letter may help other OAPs to check and be very careful with whom they deal. And if anyone reading this could help with the firm concerned, I would be very grateful. And again, name and address supplied.
Merle Walden says, competition is good for Waitrose. Sir, I read with interest the letter from Mrs. Marriott, Chronicle, August 23rd, who does not think that another supermarket at Week is necessary in addition to the existing Co-op and Waitrose. I personally am not greatly enamoured of the Winchester Waitrose. In the past, I have shopped at Waitrose in both Romsey and Chandler's Ford, and feel that generally a better service is offered there. I do not wish to see the Co-op go out of business, but feel that a bit of competition from Aldi or any other supermarket, had it arisen, would be good for Waitrose and might keep them on their toes in certain areas. Merle Walden, Mrs. Wentworth Grange, Winchester.
Village blighted by traffic, writes Dinah Rooney. Sir, I have only stayed for a short time in Otterbourne, but have been amazed and frightened by the amount of traffic which passes through the village. It's not just the normal amount of cars and buses, but the hairy good vehicles, being mainly refuse vehicles, which pass through at approximately one every few minutes. The worst offenders of all are the environmental services lorries, which truly smell obnoxious, to say the least, and leave the smell for quite a while after passing. Does this lovely village have to put up with such traffic? Or is this the real world? Dinah Rooney, Otterbourne.
Mrs. Sarah Robinson explains why boundary changes matter. Sir, I wonder if I might reply to the letter from Mr. Gordon in the Chronicle on August the 16th. The recent decision of the Liberal Democrats to refuse to support boundary changes really does belie their very name. The Lib Dem push for proportional representation would have led to permanent coalition between them and the other parties. So how is that for the right to rule? Could Mr. Gordon explain to me where the democratic accountability of the election of the Lords for a single term of 15 years is? That smacks of an elected dictatorship to me. He writes that the boundary changes without changes to the voting system looks like gerrymandering. Did it never occur to him that there is unfairness in the current boundaries, when the Conservatives have to have a 10% lead over the Labour Party to win an election? There is a built-in disadvantage now, which the boundary changes would alleviate. Perhaps he might like to look at some facts which he has overlooked. The boundary changes will make all constituencies as near as possible of equal size, approximately 75,000. This will mean that the votes in all constituencies will carry the same weight. The Isle of Wight currently has a total electorate of 109,992, whilst Na Hailan and Ar in the Outer Hebrides has only 21,780. And I hope I pronounced that correctly. I suppose that if you agree with the fact that some voters' wishes should be counted two or three times, it will not worry you that some votes are currently worth five times as others. Mr. Clegg's Sheffield Hallam constituency is only 87%, 68,798, the size of Mr. Cameron's Witney seat, 78,766, whereas Eastleigh, 77,436, is 104% the size of Winchester, 73,805. I do wish that all our media explained things more clearly, using facts and figures to give the people the facts on matters such as of such import as this. Mrs. Sarah Robinson, Old Station Road, Itchen Abbas.
And that concludes the letters to the editor for this week. It's time for your say now. We went out and we asked people, pilot 20-mile-an-hour zones could be introduced in Winchester soon. Noel has the replies.
Yes, are you in favour of them? Peter McLaren Smith, 70, retired soldier of Oglando Road, Winchester, said, I would be happy for that to be introduced on my road. My son was killed at 8 years old. Had the limit been 20 miles an hour, then perhaps he would still be here. It might be a good idea if they put the limit in place based on the number of injuries in a particular area. While Linda Ricketts, 20, student of Thurmond Crescent, Winchester, said, it will make the area a lot safer so that children can mess around without major worry, especially in residential areas where there are often lots of parked cars and the roads can get quite busy. It's a good idea. And Michael McGovern, 46, an archaeologist of Pemberton Road, Winchester, Week, said, I think it's a good idea, and I would say yes to it in my area, because we do get some little brats speeding on our street. It needs to be enforced, though, or what's the point? It's something that would be good mainly for housing estates. And Nancy Newport, 57, retired, West Hill Park Green, Winchester, said, I think it's a very good thing in built-up areas and near schools. It would be particularly good. But in the city centre, I'm not so sure it would work. I think most people would be happy for it to be introduced in their street.
And Ellen's got people in pictures for us.
There are three items here. The first one is a boost for a riding charity. And there's a picture of a woman holding a horse and one of those great big checks that they give when they have charities. An Eastleigh charity has received a much needed financial boost. The Hampshire Riding Therapy Centre was surprised with a cheque for £1,709 following an open day. The fundraiser featured face painting, wet sponge throwing and jewellery sales. Basepoint Business Centres, which have chosen the Riding Therapy Centre as their nominated charity, match-funded the money raised. The Hampshire Riding Therapy Centre is dedicated to the provision of riding tuition and therapy to people with special disabilities or needs. The second item is about a nurse's mission in Africa, and there's a picture of a group of women sitting around in a circle with children. A Winchester nurse has returned from one of the poorest countries in Africa, where she has been helping hospitals and orphanages. Oncology nurse Eleanor Gordon, who's pictured, is a sister at BMI Sarum Road Hospital and was in Uganda to volunteer at a hospital in the town of Kisoro. The two-week trip involved assisting with education and offering medical guidance to nurses at the hospital, as well as at a child crisis centre for abandoned and orphaned children. Eleanor, who has 35 years of experience as a nurse, said, "It was so humbling. To see three people to one hospital bed in a typical ward was incredible. Some of the equipment in the hospital couldn't be used because of the low levels of electricity." And she added, "There is no chemotherapy at the hospital in Kisoro. When patients are diagnosed, it is in the late stages of cancer, and they have to travel nearly 300 miles into the capital, Kampala, which makes it impossible for the vast majority." And the third piece is, hot dogs help disabled. A canine-themed fundraiser has topped last year's event. Around 30 families attended Houghton Lodge Gardens in Stockbridge for a family dog walk and treasure hunt to raise funds for Hampshire disability charity Enham Trust. Liz Cosgrove, events and community fundraiser, said they had had double the number of people from the first year when it rained, but the weather proved too warm for some to attempt the longer 3-mile course around the farm, so most stuck to the route through the gardens. Test Valley Mayor Dorothy Baverstock, who is, there's a photograph of her with a rather handsome dog, was among those attending the event, which raised around £300. Enham Trust started in 1919 as a rehabilitation unit for injured servicemen from the First World War, but now supports people with mental and physical disabilities.
Now we go back through the years for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Deborah.
And 25 years ago was 1987. There is now only one permanent member left at the Southern Water Run Garnier Road sewage pumping station, which, at the end of the month, became a fully automated operation. Keeping a careful watch over the old station is a 15-year-old tomcat called Ginger, who may not have the technical expertise of his former colleagues, but by way of a cat flap and daily feeding by the mobile staff, languishes in his favourite quarters on the site. Ginger is just one of the colourful aspects of the old pumping station. And a second item, mounting tension in the Middle East has dashed John Pilkington's plans to travel the Silk Route from Venice to eastern China, entirely by land or sea. In his latest letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, John explained that he had had to complete his journey to Karachi in Pakistan by air, the last thing he was intending. Having reached Haifa about 3 weeks ago, John, the Winchester adventurer and senior planner with Hampshire County Council, found that all his options had been eradicated when he was refused entry to Iran, Syria and Saudi Arabia.
And going back to 50 years ago, please, Noel.
Yes, two items from 1962. A public inquiry sat well into Wednesday evening at Winchester Guildhall, hearing evidence on when a new large housing estate should be started on 133.5 acres of land at St Cross. The owners, Goodstone Developments Limited, want to build houses, flats, a shopping centre and a county council junior school at Badger Farm, which is bounded by the London-Southampton railway line, Bushfield Camp and by properties fronting Stanmore Lane. Both the Hampshire County Council and the Winchester Rural District Council state that a start should not be made on the development until after 1971. And the second item, look to the future with the Hussars, has been the personal message for young men in Hampshire this week, as the 10th Royal Hussars, Prince of Wales' own, and the county's only regular army armoured regiment, launched its first major publicity campaign.
And going back to 100 years ago, please, Ellen.
Which takes us to 1912. At 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, M. Salmett, the Daily Mail flying man, passed over Winchester on his journey from Southampton. He flew over Berwick Road and then in the direction of Three Maids Hill, his object apparently being to pick up the railway. He was flying at a great speed, but many people obtained an excellent view of the flight.
And 200 years ago, please, Deborah.
And two items from 1812. There are at present visible, near the centre of the sun's disk, two very large spots, which are distinctly seen with a telescope of even small magnifying powers, when provided with a dark glass to protect the eye of the observer from the sun's rays. It is remarkable that these spots were not visible before the 10th inst, some days previous to which a large circular spot appeared at the centre of the sun's disk. A melancholy case of hydrophobia occurred last week at Imber in Wiltshire, in the person of a boy about 15 years of age, son of J. Brunsdon of that parish, a labourer. The poor boy was bitten about 2 months ago. The subsequent conduct of the dog excited suspicions of his being mad, and the boy was sent to sea and dipped. He continued in perfect health till the 11th inst, when he complained of slight indisposition. He was rather worse on Wednesday, and on Thursday morning a medical gentleman was called in, who immediately pronounced it to be a decided case of hydrophobia.
Now it's time for the editorial comment read by Noel.
Yes, drivers must make these zones a success, says the editor. Statistics show that a child hit by a car at 40 miles an hour is more than likely not to survive. But at 20 miles an hour, the reverse is true. That's just one reason why plans by the County Council to introduce selected 20 miles an hour zones have been welcomed. Hampshire County Council has earmarked £200,000 to trial 20 mile an hour limits in residential areas and a further £150,000 specifically for Winchester has been secured from the local Sustainable Transport Fund. Whilst welcoming the move, the success of this initiative will be entirely down to motorists. Hard-pressed police will no doubt view it as a low priority. Let's hope drivers act responsibly and help make our residential roads safer places to be. Too many villages have seen the gradual disappearance of traditional amenities like post offices, schools and pubs over the years. Now an enterprising eastern publican is to start up a shop in the car park of her pub. The wooden structure may resemble a giant Wendy house, but will have power and water supplies and sell locally sourced and produced fare for villagers. With the nearest shop some 3 or 4 miles away, the venture is bound to be popular. We wish Karen Wells much success. No doubt other villages will be keeping a close eye on how it goes.
And now we continue with items of general news, beginning with Deborah.
Housing chief backs plan to sell off expensive stock. A leading Winchester city councillor has given his backing to controversial plans to sell off expensive council houses. Local authorities have been urged to rid themselves of homes in upmarket postcodes by the Prime Minister's favourite think tank, the Policy Exchange. It's estimated around £4.5 billion a year could be raised if councils sold higher-priced homes when tenants moved out. Money that could then be invested in extra housing in cheaper areas. Critics have said that it would create ghettos. But Ian Tate, portfolio holder for new homes in the City Council, gave the idea his firm support. The Conservative councillor said practical examples of that might be selling off housing in developments at Highcroft on Sleepers Hill or Chilbolton Avenue to develop significantly more housing elsewhere, and I would be supportive of that. Councillor Tate said council properties in Cannon Street, Colebrook Street and Wharf Hill could also be sold, and the proceeds used to build more new homes in cheaper areas. He said, "We have 3,400 people on our waiting list, so we have to maximise delivery of affordable housing. People want to be housed. They're not waiting to be housed in Chilbolton Avenue particularly. Winchester is a great place to live, and people are very happy to live in estates like Stanmore, Harestock and Wick. What we need is housing numbers rather than social engineering." The City Council has already sold off some of its more pricey properties. In 2007, five houses, four of them Grade 2 listed and dating from the 1840s, were put up for auction. The Council had a policy of selling up to 10 empty homes a year if they needed repairs costing more than £8,000. However, Councillor Tate said he had grave concerns about freeing developers from the legal obligation to build houses at affordable prices. There are fears the government plans to scrap rules which currently force developers to set aside a proportion of new build schemes for affordable housing. Property firms have lobbied for the regulations to be relaxed, claiming they discourage new house building. A review is expected to recommend that local authorities should have the power to waive the Section 106 rules.
Amazing flowers and plants, perfect fruit and vegetables, and fantastic cooking were all on display at Winchester Horticultural Society's most recent show. It was a challenging season, with exhibitors battling against storms and torrential rains in order to produce the goods at the annual autumn show at Badger Farm Community Centre earlier this month. On hand to award the prizes was the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson. He said, "I'm always amazed and slightly envious of the skills people have to produce such wonderful exhibits." The number of entries was higher than expected, particularly in the flower classes, with many fine dahlias and gladioli on show. In the non-horticultural classes, there were jars of marmalade and chutney, cakes and biscuits, and the photography section displayed some splendid close-ups of flowers and sporting action shots. Maya Whitmarsh of the Horticultural Society said, "Despite the fickle weather during the spring and summer seasons, members succeeded in putting on an admirable autumn show." And this is accompanied by two pictures of very colourful flowers and vegetables, all laid out beautifully.
Aaron's hopes for gold. Wheelchair rugby star to compete in Paralympics. Wheelchair rugby star Aaron Phipps is aiming for a place on the podium in the London Paralympics. The 29-year-old Hampshire County Council employee, who works in Winchester, has been on cloud nine since being selected for Team GB in the second part of the greatest sporting event on earth. And the sporting ace hopes the full contact and fast pace of wheelchair rugby, also called murder ball, will win over more fans to the sport. The difference between wheelchair rugby and other Paralympic sports is that it is the only full contact one, he said. So we're allowed to smash into each other's team's wheelchairs. It's bonkers. Brought and brought up in Totten, Aaron has used a wheelchair since he had both legs amputated below the knee after suffering meningitis when he was 15. He also lost his fingertips. I had flu-like symptoms and went to bed with a temperature. I was sick twice in the night and then my dad woke me up in the morning and I collapsed. An hour later I was on a life support machine. He spent a year in hospitals at Southampton and Salisbury, which has a specialist burns unit, as the effect on his limbs was similar to severe burns. And now the former Testwood school pupil represents his country at the highest level and is looking forward to playing in front of 10,000 people in a packed basketball stadium in the Olympic Park. Great Britain's first game is against current world champions, the USA, next Wednesday, September the 5th, and tickets have already sold out. The crunch phone call to say he'd been selected came just as he arrived at a primary school in Alton to give a talk. I got emotional and cried, he said. The head teacher was tapping on my car window to see if I was all right, but I was unable to tell anyone at the time. I was on cloud nine for a few days, but then the hard work continues, says Aaron, who's just returned from a six-week training camp in Norfolk with the rest of the squad. He mostly trains at Southampton Solent University with Professor Stuart Bruce Lowe, who he credits with making the biggest difference to his career. A former careers advisor with connections, the athlete now works for Children's Services as a London 2012 coordinator, a temporary post. Hampshire County Council has been really good about giving me time off to train. It was his wife, Vicky, aged 30, who got him to try wheelchair sports 8 years ago. And the couple have a 13-month-old baby daughter, Ella.
I have a photograph here of a large crowd of very cheerful-looking visitors, of villagers ranging in all sorts of ages, right down to toddlers, standing outside Wickham Community Centre. And the article reads, "This is how you show community spirit." Villagers in Wickham gathered at their community centre to back its bid to be Hampshire Village of the Year. Local traders and community groups put together an exhibition on what makes the village great at the community centre in Mill Lane, which was scrutinised by competition judges. City councillor and parish council chairman Angela Clear said the village had pulled together at short notice to put on a brilliant exhibition. She said, "We had everything from Morris dancing, model aeroplanes, and the team from the new doctor's surgery talking about everything that goes on here. We were doing a lot for the Jubilee, and so we thought we may as well go for it, and the next thing we knew, we were nominated. It went extremely well, and I think the judge was really quite pleased with what he saw. But it's in the judge's hands now." Organisations in Wickham did extremely well to get together and pull it off, and I was delighted with their efforts. Wickham has a history of success in the competition, having won the Gong before in 2007. Defending champions, Bishop Sutton, are also nominated again and will host the awards ceremony on September the 25th at the Village Hall. Compton and Shawford are also among the list of finalists, and villagers will find out who has won on Monday, September the 3rd.
And here's another story from a village. "Eastern villagers proved it will take more than grey skies to dampen their spirits," writes Wesley Rock. The Eastern Village Fate. Ferret racing, a novelty dog show and a white elephant stall confirmed it was business as usual at the annual village fete on Bank Holiday Monday. Held at the home of Eastern and Martyr Worthy Cricket Ground and in front of a gleaming village hall, locals were out in force. The Reverend Andrew Micklefield got proceedings underway at 2 p.m., but responsibilities did not stop there for Itchen Valley's rector. I judged the dog's waggiest tail competition, and there were some very waggy tails, he said. It was a difficult decision, but we got the right winner, I think. Turnout for the Eastern Fete is always strong. Indeed, it's one of the few villages that can sustain an annual rather than biannual fete, and organiser Judy Bishop was satisfied with this year's numbers. She said all 800 programmes were sold, so we have had well over 1,000 people. I mean, if you look at the magician show, it's absolutely chock-a-block. As ever, children delighted in being hurtled across the field in the wheelbarrow race, with a wide range of refreshments on offer afterwards for thirsty parents. The ferret racing was back by popular demand, raising a cacophony of barks from canine fete-goers. John and Liz Platt of Martyrworthy are Eastern Fete veterans. Mr. Platt said, "They manage this fete extremely well. It's a very well-run affair. This one always seems to have a good range of things, and we know a lot of people here, so we enjoy coming." The now ubiquitous White Elephant stall, where unwanted household items are donated and sold on to villagers, did a roaring trade. Summer fetes are often considered a quintessentially British tradition, and this year's Easton's fete proved the tradition is alive and kicking. And there are some lovely photographs, as you would expect. The wheelbarrow race with four people, adults, rushing along with wheelbarrows full of small children. And then there's some other small children meeting, I have to say, a rather unconvincing Winnie the Pooh at the fete. And then some more pictures of young children looking happily with their fathers.
Torch lights up hospice. Olympic magic came to Naomi House, bringing joy to children and staff alike. Former army captain Alan Hairsign, a prolific fundraiser, brought the Olympic torch to the Children's Hospice and Jack's Place, which cares for young adults. Katie Burton, activities coordinator at the hospice, said, "The arrival of a real Olympic torch at the hospice allowed the children to be part of a poignant moment in history. It's brilliant for them to have had the chance to hold something so tactile." The appearance of the torch was the focal point for games and activities, while carers helped children trace the symbolic holes on its surface, explaining their significance. The young people at Jack's Place were able to talk to Mr. Hairsign, who's pictured left in his white torch carrier's outfit holding the Olympic torch, with staff and patients around him, about his fundraising work and what it was like to carry the torch in the lead-up to the games. Naomi House and Jack's Place hospices are to open their doors to the public for an open day and fete on Saturday, September the 15th, allowing visitors to look round the hospice and gardens. There are lots of activities planned, with free prize draw and pony rides and bouncy castles, and visitors will have the chance to meet and chat to the staff and browse a large range of unique gift ideas from the Naomi House shops and market stalls. Vintage buses will be transporting people from the free park and ride at the Forest Edge Cart Club in Barton Stacey, and they'll take visitors to the hospice's grounds. Doors open at 11 a.m. and the last entry is at 4 p.m. It costs £2 for an adult, 50 pence for children. Under fives can visit for free, and that is on Saturday, September the 15th.
44th Boat Show, Bigger and Better. Thousands of visitors are expected to attend this year's PSB Southampton Boat Show at Mayflower Park. Having attracted more than 110,000 visitors last year, the 10-day show is expected to be a major hit once again, with a number of new attractions making it bigger and better than ever, say organisers. There will be up to 1,000 boats on display at one of Europe's largest purpose-built marinas, which has over 2 kilometres of pontoons. For the first time, guests will be able to test their sailing skills and experience the thrill of racing a round-the-world yacht aboard the Whitbread 60 Solent Sailing Experience. For the less energetic visitors, there'll be the chance to watch top sailors compete to be best in show, racing in the PSB Southampton Boat Show National Interclub Team Racing Competitions. There will also be the first opportunity to see the Alexandra Shackleton, a replica boat which is about to replicate the gruelling 800-mile Southern Ocean voyage that took place in 1916 in one of history's greatest rescue missions. Another boat not to be missed is the carefully crafted sports boat made entirely from donated wood, including a piece from Jimi Hendrix's guitar, the Cutty Sark and the Mary Rose. But as well as the new additions to proceedings, the old favourites have not been forgotten. The eagerly anticipated Ladies' Day will make a return, with the competition for Best Dressed Lady set to be hotly contested. Breast Cancer Campaign is the official Ladies' Day charity for this year. Taking place on Thursday, September the 20th, the fourth annual Ladies' Day will see visitors dressed to impress, enjoying the boats, luxury and entertainment, whilst vying to win the coveted day's prize. There will also be a daily flotilla during the week-long event, featuring modern, vintage and iconic boats. This year's event, the 44th Boat Show in Southampton, will take place between September the 14th and the 23rd. For tickets, visit southamptonboatshow.com or call 0871 230 7140.
Evans gets residence in a spin. Disc jockey Chris Evans has always been a divisive figure, but now it seems that the furore over his classic car bonanza has divided the Hampshire village of Overton. Over the bank holiday weekend, Evans's Car Fest drew 20,000 vintage car enthusiasts to Laverstoke Farm Park, the 250-acre site owned by former Formula One champion Jody Scheckter. Mark Davis, chief executive of Imperial College Healthcare NHS Trust, and whose home was surrounded by the Carfest campsite, said he was worried that the event could become even bigger in the future. Mr. Davis had to contact police after an intruder broke into his property on Saturday night and released one of the family's horses. Villagers whose properties were closest to the event reported bright lights shining into their bedrooms and loud generators throughout the night. Plans for the show, which has so far raised £750,000 for children in need, were first announced on Radio 2 by Evans, who said he hoped it would become as big as Glastonbury. Another nearby resident, Guy Crosslands, 53, said, "We're not against children in need, of course, and the event was well run, which wasn't really a surprise, but I'm concerned that the charity is a bit of a Trojan horse, because the licence they've been given means they can have two events a year of 20,000 people." However, some locals were said to be untroubled by the event. Mr. Scheckter said in a statement, "We have had overwhelming positive feedback regarding the Car Fest from local residents and visitors alike, all commenting on how very well run the family event has been, and on the part of the local residents, a total lack of any disruption with traffic, noise or crime."
There is an obituary for Joan Spittle, a teacher and headmistress who also helped run a popular family wool shop in Winchester. A large number of mourners attended the funeral on August the 8th of Joan Spittle, who lived for many years in St. Cross, Winchester. She was 99. Joan was born at the Croft family home, next to the corner shop, at the junction of St. Faith's and Clazentham Roads on January the 1st, 1913, to Fred and Bertha Croft, who ran the St. Cross village store. Being brought up through the Great War instilled a firm sense of duty and values on all family members, solid values which Joan practised through her working and family life. After attending St. Faith's Primary School, followed by the County High School for Girls in Winchester, Joan decided to become a teacher and moved to London to study at Goldsmiths College. In 1938, she married Will Spittle, whom she'd originally met through the racehorse training stables at Chilcombe, where his father worked as a trainer. World War II saw Joan taking up emergency ambulance driving in South London shortly after her marriage, and their three children arrived between 1943 and 1948. Joan later took to teaching again and became headmistress at Hailden School for Girls in West London. Following retirement and the death of her husband in 1968, Joan, now a grandmother, moved back to St Cross, to the house where she was born, to help her sister Muriel, usually called Molly, in the famous Croft family wool shop in the High Street, and later also in Drury Street.
A Winchester chippy is in the running to be named the best takeaway in central and southern England. The Place Fish and Chip Shop in Hairstock is one of five takeaways shortlisted for Regional Independent Takeaway of the Year at the National Fish and Chip Awards in 2013. Over the next few months, mystery judges will visit the Prior's Dean Road takeaway to put the food to the test. Manager Christopher Pitteras said he was thrilled the business had been nominated and put it down to the efforts of his hard-working staff. He said, "We put lots of hard work into this business, and it's nice the organisers of the competition have seen that and put us through. We always use the best raw materials and frying techniques, and, along with a mixture of other things, that's what makes us stand out." They're competing against Oliver's of Basingstoke, Best Fry of Southampton, Wigmore Fish and Chips of Luton, and the Ridgeway Fish Bar of St Albans. The regional winner will go on to compete for the national award at a glitzy awards ceremony in London in January. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of all the staff looking very jolly and smiling and boxes of fish in front of them. And they are Gary Wealdon, Rosie Smith, Adele Lanyon, manager Chris Pitteras, Linda Ead and James Everett.
"We're Here to Stay," say pub's latest landlords. A pair of Winchester pub entrepreneurs have added another watering hole to their business. Janet Graham and Gary Swan have taken over the Cricketers in Easton. The couple already run the King Alfred in Saxon Road, Hyde, and the Roebuck Inn in Stockbridge Road. The Cricketers has had several tenants over the past few years, but Janet, 55, said they were here for the long term. She said, "We have spent £30,000 to £40,000 during the place up, ripping everything out and putting in a new kitchen and new furniture. We have great plans for this place. The residents here have had so many tenants over the last 5 to 10 years, but I think our reputation from the King Alfred and the Roebuck has reassured them. What people want is consistency, professionalism and value, and we have that. It will be a proper pub." She added, "We'll be living at the pub, and I think it's important people know it's a home for us, and we've done so much work here, so we're serious about the place." Janet added food would be a big part of the business, with a £5 menu available for lunch and dinner, as well as pub specialities. Bed and breakfast accommodation is also set to begin next month. The couple, who have been running pubs in Winchester for 16 years, have signed a renewable 5-year lease with the building's owners, Marston's.
Business gets the taste of success. A clutch of awards for local niche food producers. And there are pictures of three smiling women holding a large pan full of strawberry jam, stirring it with a wooden spoon. Winchester food producers are enjoying the sweet taste of success after scooping national awards. The Hampshire Jam and Chutney Company and Jude's Ice Cream won big at the Great Taste Awards. There was double success for the Hampshire Jam and Chutney Company, based in Alder Close, Colden Common, which won a 3 gold star for its raspberry jam and a 1 gold star for its crunchy cucumber chutney. Sue Rockhill, a director, said, "We didn't expect this at all. We know our products are good, and our customers know that too, but we did not think we'd do so well, and we are delighted. These are two of our best sellers, especially the cucumber, which is our most popular chutney. Once you try it, you're addicted." Sue and her fellow director, Valerie Little, run the business out of their own kitchens, with just one employee, Glenda Morgan, helping them. Jude's Ice Cream, based in Hazley Road, Twyford, also picked up two awards. Two gold stars for its Valrhona dark chocolate sorbet and one gold star for its strawberry sorbet. James Wright, director of Jude's, said, "We're really excited that these flavours were recognised and we think they are great. A lot of effort goes into it and it's what we're really focused on here at Jude's, trying to make the best ice cream possible. We look forward to coming back to the awards next year. They are great awards and we're always looking to create new flavours." Winchester and Alsford coffee shop Caracoli also picked up awards for two of its baked products. The cafe, which first opened in Alsford in 2005, won gold stars for its Bakewell slice and its Caracoli cookie. James Nichols, the managing director, said, "Winning two more gold stars this year for our Caracoli produce is a wonderful accolade for us. Caracoli now has an impressive tally of 8 gold stars awarded since 2009, which gives the whole Caracoli team enormous pride. Maison Bloc also won two awards, 2 gold stars for its concerto cake and a gold star for its almond croissant. Around 9,000 businesses entered the awards. And the prizes for Jude's and the Hampshire Jam and Chutney Company were two of more than 20 won by Hampshire Fair members.
Know Your Deadly Fruits. A Winchester botanist is offering a series of walks through Winchester this autumn to help foragers recognise deadly fruit. Celia Cox, who runs woodland walk group Wild Plant Discovery, is running the hedgerow walks. She said, "There are many colourful fruits to pick, such as elderberries, dewberries, roses and hawthorn, which are edible. Unfortunately, there are also many berries that look equally attractive, such as deadly nightshade, lords and ladies, yew and spindle, but these are poisonous and can cause anything from gastrointestinal signs to death." The walks last between 2 and 3 hours and begin on Saturday, September the 1st.
And here's a bit more detail over the GCSE grading problem. Hampshire schools are among those across the country who have complained that students who sat GCSE English have been harshly marked down. Head teachers have reported their concerns over the issue of downgrading of this year's GCSEs to the County Council. Anger has risen as some pupils predicted a grade C in English achieved a D, meaning they could struggle to get on college courses or apprenticeships next month. Others who were expected to get an A or A star missed out on the top grades. Some head teachers are demanding a total remark of all English papers taken by their students last June. The Association of School and College Leavers, which represents over 17,000 heads, is considering legal action against the exam authorities for imposing higher grade boundaries on pupils who took English exams in June than they did in January. As threats of legal action have mounted, the exams regulator Ofqual said it would look again at GCSE grading. The row is a major headache for Education Secretary Michael Gove, who is keen to see an end to grade inflation but has denied any political interference. Councillor Roy Perry, who's in charge of county-run schools, said 60% of Hampshire pupils achieved 5 or more GCSE grades A star to C, including English and maths, but some schools had seen an unexpected decline in their English results. The Tory council chief said, "Overall, it's only just over a 1% reduction, but it can be more significant in some schools. I do hope that Ofqual will take these concerns from head teachers seriously and produce a speedy resolution."
Questions raised over road project. Liberal Democrats on the County Council are calling for an inquiry into why a New Forest road is to be shut for 6 months to investigate if it should be closed permanently to through traffic. With just 30 cars passing through Back Lane in Sway every hour, it hardly ranks as one of Hampshire's traffic-plagued roads. If council bosses go ahead with permanent closure, the lane would be returned to Forest from the junction of Pitmore Road to just above the edge of the village. Homes, such as the one owned on the road by Hampshire County Council leader Ken Thorber, would then enjoy the tranquillity of a cul-de-sac. Opposition leader Councillor Ken House said, "Eyebrows will be rightly raised that this quiet little country lane has seen so much attention from hard-pressed county environment staff, when residents worried about busy A and B roads have to fight to get safety issues raised. Is this really Hampshire's top priority in the New Forest?" A petition against the trial closure launched last week has already attracted more than 100 names, with villagers angry at not being consulted about the closure and baffled why an important but hardly busy through route faces closure. Petition organiser and former parish councillor Andrew, who lives in nearby Pitmore Lane, said, "It is an unnecessary and it's a waste of public money. There is a lot of feeling about this in the village." Some Back Lane residents support the trial, however, because they believe it has become a rat run. But Brenda Turner, aged 84, who has lived in Back Lane for 40 years, said there were no traffic problems and added, "I think it's disgusting. It is a road, and it has been a road in all the years I have known it. It is completely unnecessary, and it should not be shut off." A council spokesman distanced Councillor Thorber from the decision, claiming he had no prior knowledge of the road closure trial costing £3,000.
Crime Stoppers chief joins race for top police post. The chairman of Hampshire Crime Stoppers is to join the race to become the county's new police commissioner. Simon Hayes plans to officially launch his campaign this week, becoming the first independent candidate for the £85,000 a year job. The 53-year-old is a former Conservative councillor, having served on the County Council and led New Forest District Council, but he insisted he was now free of political constraints and no longer a member of the Tory Party, having last served as a councillor in 2005. He said, "My elected political days are behind me now. Life has moved on. I've seen what it's like and the pressure that's put on political candidates, and I feel liberated by being able to stand as an independent." However, he admitted, "I just wait for the backlash from people who've known me politically." Mr. Hayes, who lives in Bishop's Waltham, is also a former chairman of Hampshire Police Authority, the organisation that is being replaced by the new role of Police and Crime Commissioner, and is a director of the Perham Trust, which works with ex-offenders. Despite his party political past, he plans to stand against the politicalisation of the police, hoping his experience in criminal justice matters will win him votes. He said it was inevitable that candidates representing one of the major parties would be influenced by national politics, saying that this was distasteful. He added, "I'm sure that all of us feel very strongly about the possibility of political interference in policing." Mr. Hayes joins Conservative candidate and former MP Michael Mates and Labour nomination Jackie Raymond, a Southampton councillor and until recently the chairman of Hampshire Police Authority. The Lib Dems are also planning to put someone forward. Independent candidates from across the country have complained that they were being frozen out by the rules governing the November the 15th elections. Unlike in parliamentary elections, every candidate has not been allowed one free mail shot, with ministers saying this would be too expensive. A letter was presented to Downing Street saying this was perverse and undemocratic.
Esther Ranson is launching a bid to return to TV with a new local station. Former That's Life presenter Esther Ranson could return to TV screens in Hampshire. As it emerged, she is part of a consortium bidding for a new local television station. Ms. Ranson, pictured, who is based in the New Forest, is a director of That's Media Consortium that is one of two bidders for a new TV station. A rival bid from TV Solent is backed by Solent University, which would involve its staff and students from its professional broadcast operation in the venture. Daniel Cass, the chief executive officer of That's Media, confirmed Ms. Ranson would be vice president of programming at the proposed That's Solent channel and would return to presenting duties. His company is also bidding to run a similarly titled local station in Oxford. He said Ms. Ranson would present a Sunday lunchtime show in Southampton, provisionally titled That's Solent on Sunday. It would have a magazine format, not a million miles away from That's Life, he said, mixing more serious news with lighter, entertaining segments. Ms. Ranson, 72, who fronted That's Life for more than 20 years until the series was axed in 1994, said, "We will expose rogue plumbers and petty bureaucrats and then celebrate heroic grannies and talented pets." Mr. Cass said Ms. Ranson would have an active, hands-on role behind the cameras, supporting the channel's news team. He also said that round-the-world clipper race founder and sailing legend Sir Robin Knox-Johnston has been lined up to present marine-related programming.
Publican to bring back the village shop. For decades, traditional village shops have been disappearing around Hampshire. But now a publican in Easton is looking to buck that trend. Karen Wells, who runs the popular Chestnut Horse in the village on the edge of Winchester, is set to open a small shop in the pub car park next month. Karen, aged 30, said she got the idea from seeing other pubs selling fruit and vegetables and thought she could expand on that. "I realised there was a want and need for a shop here, not just for the village, but also the Itchen Valley. The nearest one is 3 or 4 miles away. So I thought I'd embark on a project to diversify the way the pub is. I sent a questionnaire out to around 250 or 300 people in the valley, and I got a great response back saying it was a brilliant idea. Some asked if it was viable, but I think it can be, because there will be a lot of overlapping with people coming here for the pub and stopping in at the shop and vice versa. I think it'll be a profitable standalone business, so the pub and shop can complement each other with the quality of service and produce in both of them." She added she already has deals in place with local suppliers like Jude's Ice Cream, the Hampshire Jam and Chutney Company and Lyburn Cheese to supply produce, while she'll get eggs and chickens from local residents. And she's recruited her parents to help build and run the shop. And there's a picture of the shop, and it says this is similar in design to the one set to open in Easton. And it's a small wooden building with double doors, which are glass, and several windows, and a clock over the doors. It looks very attractive. Building is set to begin shortly, with the shop due to open in mid-September. And Karen is also launching a competition to name the shop and is offering a prize of a free meal for two for the winner. So to enter, send your suggestions for a new village shop in the car park of the Chestnut Horse in Easton to info@thechestnuthorse.com.
A Wonderland for Children. Children enjoyed a wonderland of fun and games. Around 400 children from across the county, including 100 from Winchester, saw Popham Airfield transformed into a giant playground, thanks to children's charity Starlight earlier this month. Seriously ill youngsters from hospitals and hospices across Hampshire gathered at the 16th annual Starlight Popham Escape Day. Starlight supports seriously and terminally ill children, and the event provided children with a range of once-in-a-lifetime experiences, such as flying in aeroplanes and helicopters, or taking a ride in hovercrafts and racing cars. To make a donation to the Starlight Children's Foundation or to refer a child for a wish, visit www.starlight.org.uk. And there is a picture of 7-year-old Adelaide Westwood, who's dressed in a bright yellow top and a bright pink hard hat, and she comes from Eastleigh, enjoying a horse ride.
Metal thefts at substations. Thieves have caused £60,000 worth of damage by dismantling two disused substations on an industrial park. Copper cables and sheets and brass nuts and bolts were all taken during 8 days of thefts from two unused electrical units at the Electron Way Industrial Estate in Chandler's Ford. The substations, owned by Scottish and Southern Electric, were targeted between August 13th and 21st, with around £2,500 metal stolen. Police say the units would have taken hours or even days to strip down, and several people to lift the copper out of the transformers. Anyone with information or who has been offered large quantities of copper for sale should call PCK on 101 or Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111. I'll say that again. Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Harvests are down due to the summer washout. The washout summer has had a serious impact on Hampshire's farmers, battling to bring in a much reduced harvest. Continual rain and lack of sunshine earlier in the summer means some crops are several weeks late and yields are well down. Arable farmers have been hit as the moisture has brought about disease in corn, and a lack of sunshine means it has not ripened properly and weighs less. Julian Gibbons, chairman of the Hampshire National Farmers Union, said that on average, across the county, crop yields were down 15% from normal and 25% down on last year's bumper crop. Particularly badly hit are yields for potatoes and apples, which are as much as 40% down. He said they're seeing disease levels in cereals that had not been seen for years, and this year was probably worse than most people have seen in their entire careers.
Council tax benefits change. Thousands of people in the Test Valley who currently have their council tax paid for them will have to pay at least part of the bill from next April. Peter Giddings, Test Valley Borough Council's economic portfolio holder, said, "The government's proposed changes to the council tax benefit scheme and the reduction in funding available for this scheme will most likely result in all working age residents who currently receive council tax benefit having to pay something towards their council tax bill. I welcome the government's decision that pensioners must be protected from the impact of these changes, but in order to maintain the level of funding to them, it's necessary to take additional measures to generate revenue and also to encourage empty homes back onto the market. Under the government's localism policies, it's being left to local councils to decide how they make good a funding shortfall. Next April, council tax benefit, which is 100% funded by central government currently, is being replaced by council tax support, which will only be 88% funded by central government. Across the Test Valley, that means a 70,000 shortfall in funding, and this is expected to be made good by charging 3,100 people for 10% of their council tax liability.
Go ahead for new rural home. Sparsholt Parish Council has lost its bid to block plans for the construction of a new home. The demolition of an existing house will go ahead and a new bungalow will be built in the Sparsholt Conservation Area. David Conroy's plans received 14 letters of support, but the Parish Council was unhappy at plans to create a new entrance by cutting into high banks and hedges, arguing they are a key characteristic of the area. However, It emerged during the meeting that since Home Lane is an unclassified road, work to improve access is permitted. Mr. Conroy assured the committee that the development would be of the highest standard.
Show celebrates the best of country life. For more than 100 years, it has been one of the premier country shows in the county. And this Saturday, September the 1st, the 104th annual Alresford Show returns to Tichborne Park. It offers a glimpse into the Hampshire farming world, from modern high-tech tractors costing £100,000 to vintage vehicles from decades past. A vintage machinery display will see several paraded around the main ring, evoking childhood memories in some visitors. Before vehicles, farmers relied on horses, and they've always been a key feature at the Alresford Show. This year is no different, with heavy horses, Iberian horses, show hunters, classes for children, and a diamond jubilee fancy dress event. A wide range of livestock will be on show, from traditional sheep, pigs and cattle, to bees, goats and even alpacas, with their owners around to answer any questions about breeding. There's a horticultural tent with displays of roses, dahlias and chrysanthemums, and for the more active, plenty to do: climbing Spider Mountain, running with the beagles in the dog show, falconry and bird of prey displays, and Alresford Rugby Club's bungee run. More than 150 trade stands and 70 craft stalls are also on site, while food will be on offer from local producers. It runs from 9 o'clock in the morning until 6 in the evening with free car parking. So there's information on the show's website, or you can buy tickets online or by telephone calling 01794 813899. That's 01749 813999, or 08452 305177. Tickets are £13 for adults, £9 for senior citizens, and accompanied under 15s go free. They're available from Morgan's Hardware and County News in Alresford, Scats in Winchester, and Bishop's Waltham Post Office.
Olympia is the name for the new giraffe. Marwell Wildlife has announced that its baby giraffe will be called Olympia. Last week, animal keepers picked four names to go to the public vote: Afia, Aria, Subira, and Olympia. The latter was a clear favourite with voters and received a 67% majority in the competition. Ian Goodwood, collection manager at Marwell, said, "We're very pleased Olympia was chosen. It's a great name and it really suits her. It's also extremely fitting with this year's Olympic fever, and it's a great way to mark the 2012 Games and Paralympics." Olympia was born on August the 17th. And is said to be making good progress. She's Marwell's second giraffe birth this year. In February, Ursula gave birth to Ruby, the giraffe, who is now 6 months old.
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Ellen Gray.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye for now. Thanks for listening. And we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet together with the laminated card when you have finished listening. Thank you and goodbye again.